This podcast is a production of Bread on the Water Media and RadioForThePeople.com and is engineered by Audio Diner Studios. Our theme music is provided to us by our dear friend Gordon Bonham, whose music can be purchased through GordonBonham.com. Our graphics for this podcast are provided by Kathy Piercy Fryan. The podcast is sponsored by Artisan Realtors and Silicon Prairie Ventures.
This podcast is intended to give people a glimpse at what it's like to get a bad diagnosis, whether it's cancer or something else, and then go through a traumatic experience. First, we will discuss how my cancer story affected me and my family. Then we will talk about how their experiences affect other patients and their families, including discussions around why you need to advocate for yourself or for your family member. As we explore other patients' experiences, we will talk to some professionals about how to move forward after a traumatic or not medical event. I expect this to be a discussion that changes over time to reflect these combined experiences that I and others have had and what our journeys are like and the inevitable twists and turns that go along with real-world experiences. Join us on this ride as we attempt to show joy and laughter as well as the tragedy. Well, welcome to episode 12 or 11 or 13, we don't know, of Normal, What's That Like? You know, it doesn't matter. We're not here to do math. We're here to talk about trauma and how we deal with it and those kinds of things. So first thing we have to do always on this podcast is thank our sponsors. So the sponsors for the podcast, the main sponsor, of course, is Silicon Prairie Ventures. There is also some associate sponsorship by way of artwork that's, if you're watching this on YouTube, you'll see behind Kevin over here, which was done by Kat Frein and done and given to me specifically, which was very cool. And Gordon Bonham provides our opening and closing music. So I think we've thanked our sponsors. We used to thank Artisan Realtors, but we don't care about them anymore. And so today we're going to do something a little different. You know, we've talked in the past about having, you know, having a team that is around you. And we've talked to family members, my family members in particular. But one of the things we haven't really done is talk to anybody about the emotional kind of piece of it beyond family, from friends or even from a professional standpoint. So this will be a great mix because the person I'm going to introduce today is Steve Moore. Steve is the pastor of First Christian Church in Falls Creek, Virginia,
which Falls is Church, Falls Church,
whatever well, Falls,
something Falls, and Disciples of Christ congregation. And Steve is here. He's not only a pastor; he's a very good friend. And so, when I was sick, Stephen was very intimately involved in my recovery from a support standpoint. In fact, he flew out here to see me from Falls Creek Church.
Falls Church.
It is Falls Church.
And I've been there.
It's just, I can't speak today. So so that's Steve's background. How long, why don't you just tell us a little bit about your background, how you got into ministry, what your kind of your little snapshot of your history, where you came from.
My elevator pitch of ministry.
Yeah, there you go.
Thanks. It's good to be here, Dan. I grew up in the Christian Church Disciples of Christ and was going to be and was an accountant for almost 5 years. But a campus minister had planted a seed for ministry in me. So I didn't want to turn 70 years old and regret not having at least tried seminary and ministry, because I did feel called, both an inward call and an outward call, to serve God and to help people. And so I was ordained in 1996, so what is that, 30 years yeah. next year. And it's been an adventure. It's always a learning, and it's a joy to have been called to this kind of ministry and this line of work that I have the privilege of doing. It's exhausting most days, but at the same time, it's a lot of joyful things as well that are involved in ministry.
Yeah, and you meet a lot of people, and you've served multiple congregations.
Served multiple congregations. Started out basically at a church in Cleveland for a short period of time, but went to seminary here in Indianapolis and came back and served a church for 10 years at Carmel Christian Church up in Carmel, Indiana, and then branched out and then came back to Indianapolis because I loved it so much and served your church, Downey Avenue Christian Church, for a short period of time and became fast friends with so many people, including you and your family. So it's been a joy, and now I'm in Virginia and hopefully finish my career out there.
Yeah, and you've got some exciting things going on at your church. And
lots of exciting things on how to serve our neighbors in need and be the gospel to love our neighbor, just as God loves all of us. So it's exciting time.
Fun. So we'll get to kind of what we came here to talk about. But, you know, so obviously you had an interesting situation when I was very sick in that you had been my pastor, but weren't at that time my pastor, but we're still very good friends, and still to this day, very good friends. So how do you take off the hat? How does that work?
That's a really good question. I don't know that I can ever take off the hat of being a pastor. It's just sort of has become part of my DNA.
Oops. Let's not move my hands. That's the other problem I have as a pastor, is I move my hands.
And so it's just part of my DNA. The difficult part, the challenge is I was your pastor, and then I was your friend and am your friend. So when I came to visit you, there was a different emotional attachment to, it's not a parishioner that's sick. And it doesn't mean I don't care deeply when a parishioner is sick, but it was one of my dear friends is sick and I need to go and see him and be present for and with him and his family. So that was the motivation out of friend. And then I think I used my kind of professional skills that they don't always teach you in seminary. Most of that teaching comes from either mentors or our clinical pastoral education, which is a unit we do in a hospital. We're basically a chaplain learning about ourselves and how to do pastoral care and ministry. So it was, I'm here as a friend first, but also to have the skills to ask the questions, to just be present, to get the cues of when, like, you're tired and so it's time for me to leave. And so I think that's just important part, particularly as friends. If you go and visit someone in the hospital, how long do I stay? What do I say? How do I do this? And a lot of it is presence is the first thing. You're there. And for me as a pastor, it's representing God. I'm representing God to my friend, representing God to the parishioner or the patient. And then just, so words don't have to, you don't have to have words. I mean, we sat for a long time in silence.
Right. We did. Yeah, because I wasn't communicating
well
for a while.
You were really, really sick.
Yeah, you and I don't usually sit in silence.
No, we don't.
So talk to me a little bit about, you know, I guess, you know, one of the things that we're hoping to share with people is what do you say, what do you do? But you're really saying that being there is the most important thing. But you get into situations where you might be visiting someone, even from your professional side, that is not a religious person. And so how do you handle those kind of situations, and what should we do when we're visiting Kevin in the hospital, which unfortunately we had to
do
this year.
You had to do that, yeah.
But hopefully that's done. But what, what's...
So I think whether a person is religious or not, again, it goes back to being present. There's always the unknown when walking into a friend's or a patient's room or a parishioner's room. What am I going to find? Who's going to be in the room? What if there's a nurse or doctor in the room? Do I enter? Do I not enter? Pastor gets a little different privilege in that a lot of times I'm invited into the space. I'm expected to be in the space. If there's a nurse in there, a lot of times I'll just wait until the nurse leaves and tell them who I am, and they'll tell the patient or the parishioner or the friend. I think the other important thing that I gauge when I go into a room, especially if there's family, is kind of there's a feel or an energy when you enter a room. What's the energy happening? Is the family staying away from the patient in the bed? Are they afraid to touch the patient? Or the person, the parishioner. Oftentimes, I'm not one to be bashful. I will go and I will touch the patient. I will hold their hand. I will put my hand on their forehead, which often gives a cue to the family like, oh my gosh, we can break that barrier of this bed. Because there's something about a hospital bed that becomes this barrier, and people stand behind the bed or at the end of the bed. And I like to at least go up and touch the person, grab their hand, the one that doesn't have the IVs and all the stuff hooked up to them, even if it's just for a brief second, because it will... I've seen it happen where it breaks that barrier, and then the family suddenly realizes, oh my gosh, we can come and touch mom. We can come and touch dad. We can sit right by the bed and hold their hand, which is a really powerful experience. And then oftentimes what I will do is, instead of, I don't want a hog sitting by the bed. So I'll say, well, why don't you come and sit here? And then it gives that, again, it gives that family member permission to go and sit with their loved one.
That's a really interesting point, in that it brings back in my memory, and Kevin probably has some of this too, that when people come to visit you, some of them pick the very farthest point away from you.
Like you're contagious.
Or that they're afraid they're going to hurt you somehow.
Right.
Or something, and I think I do remember that about you, that you were, in fact, I think you sat on the bed.
Probably.
Because the room was pretty full, and you just sat there on the bed right next to me, and chatted with me at one point, and then I think another time I was up in a chair and we sat next to each other and chatted, but I think that that's a really interesting thing to talk about, because I know I have been probably more reticent as a visitor, and especially to friends, maybe not so much with family, but to friends. I think all I touched on Kevin was his foot.
Right.
Well, some of that was the fact that I hadn't showered in about a week. That's why most folks stayed on the other side of the room.
To also say that oftentimes I'll seek permission. Is it okay if I hold your hand? Is it okay if I...
Right, sure.
But if they're not conscious...
Right.
Or if I'm the only one in the room and they're not conscious, then I'll just put my hand on their forehead and say a blessing. Sometimes I'll even say it out loud because I'm convinced that we don't know the mystery of whether someone can hear or not.
Well, and she's not here to speak for herself, but I know George Ann, who worked as a neurocritical care nurse for 20 some years, she always talked to the patient. And I mean, whether they were awake or not. And she said a lot of nurses don't do that, but she always spoke because, again, you don't know what they can and can't hear. And so she's explaining what she's doing or just talking to them in general.
I think that's so
important.
How's
your day? You know, kind of a, and it, yeah, that brings up, yeah, if you go into a room where somebody, you know, and I've been in some of those rooms where somebody was, you know, basically comatose and everybody's just real quiet. And it's kind of, yeah, that's a, you talk about a different kind of mood in the room, judging the room. So are there any things you shouldn't do or don't do?
Don't stay too long. And that's as a pastor. And I was, when I visited you as a friend, Dan, I didn't want to stay too long, but George Ann and the girls, and I think you didn't mind me staying long. I just didn't need to fill the conversation all the time. I could just sit there,
right,
and let you sleep or let you do what you needed to do. But as a pastor, it's hard to know when, okay, how long is this going to be? And it's okay that it is short, and to get the communicate. I mean, the patient will, the friend, the family member will communicate to you when it's time to leave. They'll might say, I'm really tired.
Yeah.
I'm really tired. Okay. Boom. That's your clue to wrap up the visit. If you're a pastor, get that prayer in and then leave. You know, or they'll say, thank you for visiting me. I mean, that's pretty direct. Thank you for coming to see me. Don't stay another 15 minutes.
Yeah, they're done.
They're done. And it's okay. And because, again, it goes back to what I said in the very beginning. It's your presence that matters. And I have been in the hospital as the patient. And I get why some people don't want visitors, because you're exhausted, you're sick, you don't feel good. But then I also know the power of healing that can happen if someone just pops in for 2 minutes, 3 minutes, and just says, I'm here to check on you, or I'm here to pray with you. And that just says a lot. It just means so much.
Sometimes it's energy, I think. You know, bring somebody else's energy brings you energy.
Good point.
Because you're feeling a little off, and then some, you know, you're laughing or whatever it is that you know, whatever relationship you have with that person, you know, it starts to feel, again, going back to the name of this podcast, it makes you feel normal.
Yes.
And I think that, you know, whatever you could do to make somebody feel normal. And Kevin, you and Steve, you've been there, but.
Yeah. Well, I would throw in at this point the other thing you shouldn't do, I think, from a patient standpoint, is walk in the door and go, oh my.
Oh, yes.
That's one I just would take off the table.
Did somebody do that to you?
Well, there was not directly, but it was a look
close.
Of, oh my. And I even said, look that bad? No, you're fine. But yeah, and try to prepare yourself before you enter the room.
Yes, because I have gotten that where people are like, you look really bad. Well, yes, I'm sick. There's a reason I'm in the hospital. Yeah. The other piece that, I lost my train of thought when you were talking about
the energy.
Oh, giving the family permission to leave so that you can give the family a break. Go get something to eat. Go just take a walk. Go down the hall. Because what I found in hospitals is there's no time. Yeah. Time doesn't exist. You're in these fluorescent lights or whatever kind of lights they're using these days, and there's no time. And they have usually one of those awful clocks just pasted on the wall at the foot of your bed that you get to stare at for 24 hours a day, but it doesn't make any sense because it just keeps going and going and going, and there's no sense of time. And so a visit does help break up the monotony of just another day in the hospital, lagging, doing nothing, and then you can go and get your short visit in. And then, you know, there are times I've spent more time walking to and from the parking garage than visiting, and I don't care.
Right.
I don't care. It's that I went.
So you bring up an interesting point as well. You talked about relieving the family, but sometimes I'm sure that the family needs you, be it as a pastor or a friend, as much as the patient does. And so how is that different?
It's different in... That's a good question, too. You're asking really good questions. You've done this before, I think.
I should have a podcast.
I think you've done this at least 11 times before. One of the things I like to do when I visit family is I'll ask them, what are the doctors telling you? Because there's usually, if it's a multiple family members, every family member has their role. There's the note taker, there's the crier, there's the one who just is so overwhelmed they can't think about anything. That's exaggerating, but it's not far from my experience with families. And so oftentimes I'll have families try to talk to me about what they're feeling about what's going on, but also what the doctors are telling them so that they can make sure they're on the same page and they're hearing the same thing. And then I always ask, how can the church be supportive? What can the church do? And how can I pray for you? That one, I always ask when a person's in the hospital, what do you want me to include in the prayer? Is there anything you want me to include in the prayer? What is fascinating to me is it's not usually about the person. It's not about their illness. It's about, can you pray for my family? I've gotten a lot of times where they'll say, our country is in need of prayer. Can you pray for our country, our world? But you're sick. I mean, but they're outward thinking enough that they're concerned about other things other than themselves. And so I'll make sure I include that in the prayer. But the thing I've added real recently is just, how can I pray for you? And I say that to the families. I say that to the patient. I don't know why it's like this revelation, because it shouldn't be. It should be a standard thing a pastor says is, how can I pray for you? I just don't think we ask that question enough.
Well, yeah, I think that's brilliant. I mean, I think that's brilliant. And as we talk about faith, I'm going to switch things up again and ask another question. I did kind of prep you for this one. But, you know, obviously, not only do you deal with people that are your church members and family, but faith is a funny thing when you get sick. You're either leaning on it really heavily or you're questioning it sometimes. And so, I mean, what's your experience? I mean, I don't think there's a real answer, but I mean, what kind of experiences do you see? Because I'll share mine is, you know, I think I said this to you earlier. You know, the last thing I wanted to hear was somebody to come in and go, you're in God's hands. Well, I think that's great. And the thought of that is wonderful, but without the doctors and the medicine, I would have died.
Right.
So, I mean, God's working through those people, certainly, but, you know, how do we play that game? Because I know, I mean, we're in this world today where it seems like we're either on one extreme or the other, either, well, and not completely, but we're either so we've given up everything to God or we aren't interested at all.
Right. We have these two extremes and there's all this stuff in the middle that gets murky.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that I try to do is just meet people where they are theologically. I mean, they may say, they may ask the question, well, why did God do this to me? That's a hard one for me because I don't believe that God causes you to have disease or causes right. you to have heart problems. That's just part of the way we are living on this earth, is that once you're born, you're going to die, and that there are all these things that happen to us and can happen to us. So it's hard for me to answer that question. So usually I'll try to, well, let's talk about what does that mean to you? So I'll throw back a question. Jesus was a rabbi and he was a good teacher. And a rabbi, my understanding is, likes to answer a question with the question. So I try to, you know, emulate a teacher at that point or Jesus at that point and throw back with the question. But it's really hard because though they're looking for me as a pastor for the answer. And sometimes I'll say, I don't know. There's a great mystery. You know, even when someone says, why did God cause this to happen to me? I don't know. And we don't know. It doesn't deny their theology that God somehow is causing this problem. But then I'm not saying that God caused it. I'm just saying there's a mystery that we don't know. And, or there's a, some people say, well, there's a reason to everything. Well, I'm not sure that there is. Sometimes things just happen and it really stinks. And what happened to you, really, it was bad. And there's no answer as to why it happened. The cells did what they did. And I'm called to be present on no matter what that journey looks like. No matter if we were sitting here at this table or whether you had ended up dying, I would have been present for the whole time and still am present with you today. I don't know if that answers your question or not. It does get murky on the whole theology thing, that people have some very different, I'm choosing my words carefully, different understandings of how God works and or doesn't work. And I always focus on doctors and nurses. I will always include that in the prayer. Thank you God for the doctors who are using the skills that you've gifted them to help so-and-so in this time of sickness, the nurses who provide the care. And because that, to me, that is God. That you're in God's hands when you're in the doctors and nurses' care.
Yeah,
that's, I mean, God's hands.
And I think it's appropriate for me to say, while I said what I just said a minute ago, I know that there were a lot of people out there that were praying for me, and I think that's powerful. I think that's extremely powerful, and I don't know how that works.
And that's the mystery, right? Because I think prayer is very powerful, and that we should pray, and it's okay to pray for healing. We should be praying for healing.
And I think I'm sure it made a difference. I mean, I think, but if the person in the bed next to me didn't have somebody praying for them, I guess I feel like, I'm not sure that that's a fair.
Correct. Like, ooh, people are praying for Dan. God's really pulling for Dan today, but that guy next to you, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't work that way.
Part. Yeah, that's
but,
the
but
tough
it,
part.
But it goes back, Dan, to one of the things that I really struggle with, particularly in today's world. How do people do it without a community? Even if you aren't a church, aren't a person of faith, there are a lot of people who just are doing life by themselves. And how do people do it without a community, particularly when, for me, because that's who I am, a faith community of faith, to know that people are praying for me, to know that if I needed something, I could call the pastor, I could call a friend. That it's just something that aches in my heart, because there are so many people who don't know the power of community. And you had not only your church community, but you had the whole a huge community of people who were in your corner. And somehow that made a difference to you, and I think it contributed to your healing.
Gives you like I said, I mean, it's kind of gives you energy. And I think Kevin seemed, I mean, Kevin always likes an audience, but...
I generally like to be dressed in something other than a robe with no back on it.
Right.
When I'm performing, however. So Dan, he's talking about community. You and I had the discussion the other day about that special on the areas of the
oh,
world.
Yeah.
That kind of plays into it.
Yeah, Steve, I don't know if you've ever seen this. There's it's a documentary, and it's called Blue Zones.
Hmm.
So they, and I don't know who they is, yeah, but somebody did a study of where people live the longest. Not only live the longest, but stay the healthiest in the, while they're, it's not like they live, a bunch of them live to be 80 and then they're sick, but they still hang on till they're 100. We're talking about people that thrive into their 90s and hundreds on a consistent basis. And there were three pieces to it. One was very interesting. In almost every case, the community was in a place where people did most of their transportation via walking. They were in walkable communities. And on top of that, they were also in hilly communities.
Wow.
Be it Italy in one case, Japan in another case,
right.
California was another city they used, a place in Mexico, I think, mm-hmm. and somewhere else. But, you know, they picked these communities that had this ultra long kind of longevity and peaceful. So the one piece was that they were in walkable communities. The other piece was community.
That was the biggest piece.
The biggest piece. And the third piece was how they ate.
Mm-hmm.
But the community was the, I mean, if for somebody who's never seen that program, I'm sure it's, even if it's not on Netflix, it'll be on Prime, it'll be on somewhere, just search Blue Zones. It's a really fascinating look at about health and what's important, and you know, and again, these people are in community all the time, though. I mean, like they go to, in the morning, these women go and cook together, or they sew together, or the men go and do things together, and you know, it's not just the every once in a while thing, and they're constantly, again, walking someplace versus getting in a car and driving someplace. It was very enlightening, as I say this, and then I'll get in the car later and go somewhere.
Right.
But we are fortunate enough, we do live in a community where we walk a fair amount.
Yeah.
And you do,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but that, yeah, that's another side piece. So I guess, I mean, is there anything along this topic that we haven't touched on that you or Kevin think we should?
I don't know that there's anything that you haven't touched on.
Excuse me.
It is, for me, it is such a privilege, and it's so humbling to be invited and expected to people's most vulnerable places. And those are like when you're sick, when you're dying, and to be invited into that space, I never take it for granted because it's so sacred. And I don't want to become a pastor who says, oh, I need to go visit so-and-so, I'm just going to make it as quick as possible. That, because it's not, there's nothing routine about any of that. It's How am I going to represent God? Where is God going to show up in this visit? And how can I best express my love and God's love to the family and the loved one who's experiencing illness?
First of all, I love that represent. That's a mm-hmm. amazing mm-hmm. term. I love that. The other thing that comes to me as you're talking just now is, and I meant to mention this earlier, but I think as a friend or something like that, more so than a pastor, the cue, going back to your cue from the family, I know in so many cases people are so anxious to be present that they don't always take into account what the family's wishes are. And I know that the family has a lot on the line, and we want to be careful about that. I guess if I had any advice, I would say that my family and I didn't always have the same feelings about visitors, but I think their feelings were as important as mine. I mean, they were going through they're going through this thing just like you are. And so I know, for instance, when Kevin was sick, we waited for cues from the family
right.
before we did a visit. Georgianne was working in the hospital. She was able, as a representative of the hospital, to visit.
And I will say this is an example of what you were saying earlier. Sometimes the shorter visits are even more powerful. The two people that visit me quick, but were extremely powerful, were both nurses, with Jill Eihacker and your wife. Yeah. And they would zip in quickly, and just, how are you doing? What can I do? And then out. But, it didn't feel like they were rushing out. It felt like
right.
they came in,
right.
gave me the injection. I felt much better about life knowing I had people caring about me, and then off they went. And sometimes even the people I love could, they'd be there, and it's just like, oh, I'm starting to lose it.
Yeah. I think the other piece that came up for me during what we were just talking about is leaving my judgment at the door, because it's easy to project. For example, here's a for example. Let's say there's a 95-year-old woman or person who they're ready to die, and they've had that conversation about hospice. They're ready to die. They're very, very sick. The family's not there yet, so they want to do everything they can to save mama. But how does a pastor either interject or not interject, knowing that, and I've seen this, is that the family will eventually get on board. It's just, it takes a little bit longer. But sometimes it's easy for friends or for a pastor to project and like, come on, don't they know? Or if this were my mom, this is what I would do. And so it's just kind of, you gotta, again, just be with them. And know that they're on their own journey, and they'll reach the right point, whatever that right decision is, they will reach it together. But it's sometimes hard, because as the outsider, you can see of this bigger picture, and it's like, but they'll get there. And as a pastor, it's my role just to walk alongside them, to accompany them in their path, and also to accompany the person who is ill. And that's just a mindful thing when one goes in, like, why are they doing surgery at 95? Well, that's not my decision to make.
Right.
That's their decision. How can I be a friend pastor in the midst of this? So just one last tidbit on that.
Well, so I'll kind of wrap things up, and then you can make any final comments you'd like. But I guess I want to say, first of all, to Steve, who's my friend, was my pastor. He was very important to my recovery, and I leaned on him a lot. Not only he made the visit in person, but there was an awful lot of phone calls, not only with me, but with all of, I don't know if he talked to all my kids, but I know he talked to a few of them individually. And so I think that's a rare gift that you have as a person. Thanks. And a pastor. And I mean, there's lots of pastors who are really good at pastoral care. There are some who are not very good. Usually the ones who aren't very good recognize it.
Yeah, and we all have our different gifts. It's yeah. Like no judgment on that. It's we all have yeah. our gifts. And
right.
And it's important for a pastor then to find how another to way. Do that yeah. another way, or to build up a visitation ministry, because that
elders
they're exactly
yeah yeah. But again, I want to thank you, and your great friend. Will continue to be friends hopefully for a long time, and hopefully we'll get out to visit you at Falls Creek Church.
Falls Creek Church.
I just have to say that I did attend his wedding at the church.
So you have been there. You know where it is, sort
and
of.
I know it's at Falls Church, Virginia. So with that, thanks, Kevin. You have anything you want to?
No, been great. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having
thanks
me.
Thanks again for coming, Steve. And this will conclude
episode. By the way, Steve is my friend, too. Just wanted to just acknowledge that, you know, that Steve's my friend, too. All
right. Well, why didn't you speak up earlier?
It's all right. My feelings were hurt, but I didn't want to interject.
Oh, my God. So this ends episode 11, 12, 13, whatever it is, of Normal, What's That Like? And again, we want to thank Kat Fran for the artwork, Gordon Bonham for the intro and exit music, and also Silicone Prairie Ventures for all the work, and mostly Kevin. He always has me say Silicone Prairie Ventures, which... It's
actually,
really
I have
Kevin.
You say Silicon Prairie instead of
oh
Silicon
my God.
Prairie, but
Silicon Prairie Ventures. But it's really Kevin. So thanks, Kevin. And again, this is, it makes this kind of fun in that we're all friends here.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Amen.